Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we are recording. We pay our respects to elders past and present and the Aboriginal elders of other communities who may be listening today.
Welcome to The Gays Revolting, a dissection of social and cultural issues relevant to gay men.
We put the G in LGBTQIA+, and we're here to help you be the best G you can be.
Follow us on Instagram or Twitter, or join our community on Facebook by searching The Gays Are Revolting.
And support the show and access our after shows and live streams at patreon.com/gaysrevoltingpod. Hey, boys.
Hi, Stranger Danger.
Well, I was about to say welcome back. Welcome back to me.
Welcome back to Thomas Jaspers.
I'm back, but sadly, Luke's not here this week. But don't worry, I will try to be as annoying as possible to try and
How
make
are
up
you, Dale? What's been going on?
Yeah, where the bloody hell have you been?
I've just had 10 days in Dalesford, which is, well, actually, I'll explain it in a second. But I'd booked that in ages ago, but prior to going away, you might remember the last episode I was on, which was with you, Kyle, and I was like all excited for everything to be reopening, and I had my new comedy night starting at Molly's, and I was plugging my new comedy night, and then between recording that episode and it going to air, they announced that venues wouldn't be able to open up to 50 people, so all of this work that I'd put into this new night at Molly's got put in the can. And of course, since then, we've discovered that not only that, now all venues are completely closing, and Melbourne has gone into full lockdown once again for the whole of Metro Melbourne. I had a little meltdown about that, which was a bit annoying. But luckily, my gorgeous boyfriend, hot doctor boyfriend.
Does he have a name?
He has a name. What it starts with. I think it's an S. Anyway, hot doctor boyfriend, who is also British, was supposed to be flying back to the UK for his brother's wedding a little while ago. And that obviously had to be cancelled. A little while ago, he was like, shit, well, I've got to use this 2 weeks of leave up, because the hospital has this rule, you got to use up your leave every 6 months or something like that. So we were like, let's just book it as far away as he's allowed to book it, which was, you know, start of July. Because, of course, by then, this whole COVID thing will be done, it'll be dusted, everything will be over. So we spent 7 nights in this gorgeous little cabin in Wheatsheaf, which is just outside Dalesford. Okay. And it was like on 5 acres of bush in a very sort of modern cabin with lots of glass. Like, it had one wall that's just completely glass that looked out into these big old gum trees. There was kangaroos at our window every morning, and he's like really into bird watching. So he was like loving all like the kookaburras and the rosellas and all that sort of stuff. So that was we had no mobile phone reception as well, which was very good for the mental health. And there was no television as well. So it was literally just music, red wine, books, puzzles, lots of cooking, lots of hikes. We did some gorgeous hikes around Dalesford and Hepburn and all that sort of stuff. So we had 7 days doing that, and then we had 3 days. Some friends of mine came into Dalesford, and we booked a nice big house in Dalesford. Had the last 3 days drinking and having dinner with those friends, and going to some lovely restaurants in Dalesford. The food there is just absolutely incredible. And of course, we had the places to ourselves because of the COVID-19 restrictions about how many people they can allow. Yeah, so they could only allow 20 people. So that was pretty much our group, and that was it. And then on the Sunday, I think it was, no, the Saturday, they announced the towers going into lockdown, which has been horrific. And then a few days ago, they've locked it. The entire city's gone back into lockdown. Yeah. So I'm very excited that I had a big fuck fest with my boyfriend.
must be
for
nice.
10 days because we're now going to be stuck in my house with my housemates. Have you boys been good?
Yeah, you know, back at work again. I have been back at the gym getting excited, which has been great. But now that everything is closed down, that's all like going on hold again, which is fine. Like, it's not the end of the world.
So this is a decision you've made, is to go down the fitness, a bit more down the fitness path?
Yes. So I've decided, because like I enjoy fitness quite a lot, and I just feel like I just want to learn more about it, so I'm gonna go back to school and study. So I'm gonna be a poor school student.
Good boy.
Four, which is exciting. But that may be put on hold as well, seeing how things with lockdown go. But my boss wants us to work all the way through, which is a bit stressful, but we'll see what happens. But otherwise, things are great.
Good.
I was really disappointed because Duncan and I just got really into F45. We're going like every day, and my body is pain. And it was hurting so
I don't know how you do that. I did that for 2 weeks before Christmas last year, and it nearly killed me.
And we were like meal prepping, and I was like, yes, like I've been feeling so shit about myself in quarantine and all this stuff. So I'm like, finally, I'm going to like start feeling good about myself. Yeah. And it's like just getting to like the thick of it. And then it's like, bum, bum.
I, surprisingly, because I fucking hate fitness, but have decided that this lockdown, I've got a realistic little work regime. I spoke to a friend of mine who's into all the gym stuff. And I was like, look, I don't want something ridiculous because I'm not going to do it. I'll do it for 2 days and that's it. So he's giving me a much more realistic workout for someone like me. Because
what, like the hardest exercise lifting a fork to your mouth?
I usually hover around the early 90s of kilograms, and I can't believe I'm saying this in public, but maybe it's a motivator that I'm now accepting it. I've been around about 113 kilos, so I've literally put on nearly 20 kilos since lockdown, which is
a
large amount in a small amount of time. And I think it's because I didn't realize how much incidental exercise I used to do. So yeah, I've decided, fuck it, I'm gonna do something about it. I'm not gonna be a muscle Mary like Marky. You're going to be in a few months, because I know how determined you are and how good you are with that. But I'm gonna at least get back to my my standard, my pre-COVID
projects. Yeah, and it's just about doing what you feel comfortable with and feeling good. Like, I just wanted to chasing those endorphins. Like, come on, make me feel something.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But yeah, like, you don't realize how much incidental exercise you do. Like, when you are going into the office and when you are walking to work, and then all of a sudden when you don't have any of that, it's just like, oh, shit.
Look at us turning into a fitness podcast.
I know.
We're a fitness
podcast. Leave
show
that now. Sydney shit at the door.
Oh my God. So ever since this bloody coronavirus has started, there's been countless things circulating the internet. And like, a lot of them are really like easy to laugh off, but it's kind of also getting to a stage where it's like, should make you worry, because these people are circulating all these like myths and rumors, and it kind of gets out of hand. And now they're like merging with the people like who are freaked out about 5G towers, saying it's all like related. Yeah. So like 5G is giving us all coronavirus.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of myths going out there. I think one of the most disturbing kind of fucked up ones was that people doing the nasal swabbing to test for coronavirus.
Oh my
God. We're implanting microchips into the back of people's throats as part of the, and I quote, plandemic, which was all funded by Bill Gates. So they think there's no pandemic. It's all like a conspiracy, and it's just like made by the government to microchip us.
Poor Bill Gates. Like,
I know.
I don't often feel sorry for billionaires, but the poor guy has spent so much of his time and money trying to stop the spread of HIV and AIDS for decades, trying to get clean water and education to the most remote parts of the world. Like, he's genuinely using his wealth for good. And then these fucking assholes on the computer decide that...
Like a bunch of Karens being like, no, we're getting microchips!
It's more like the anti-vaxxers and stuff. And it's just, it's like, I have family members who believe this and try to have rational conversations with me about it. And I'm like, I just try and like to not cause fights. But I'm like,
They're obsessive with it as well.
Like so obsessive. And then like with some of my family members, like back in South Africa and stuff. And then like, it's kind of tailored, like, because moves and changes like in like different regions and like where like these people are talking about and stuff. But like in regards to South Africa, it's about like the government trying to overthrow like the whites and stuff. And literally becomes this whole thing of like reverse apartheid kind of crap.
Yeah.
It's like so that the government is implementing this plan to like weaken white farmers and stuff like that.
Stop it.
So now it's like it's a government conspiracy like cover up because like the 5G towers are giving us coronavirus, and then they'll post like these videos of people like who've apparently been like a technician for like 40 years and blah blah blah, but they quit when they couldn't stand by anymore to seeing the wrong thing done, and they're here to tell you the truth about 5G towers and how it like affects your cells.
Please explain to me where you're getting this information, but like what makes you think that 5G gives you COVID? I don't understand. Like, how is it giving you a viral disease?
Because it's like altering your cells on a molecular level, so it's like creating this kind of cancer and stuff.
Yeah.
And then,
do you know what? It's just it's a cycle that has happened for a very, very long time. In the 1910s, people thought that there were vapors coming out of the electrical sockets in the house.
God,
and that they would get sick from the vapors off the electrical. Like,
they had a big smear campaign, didn't they, against electricity.
Very much like my electricity now, thanks.
I mean, it's valid in the fact that you could burn your house down quite easily back then. There was no covered wires, but as far as spreading disease and things like that, like there's always ridiculous rumors and that sort of thing. Having said that, you know, they do need to be investigated somewhat, because then of course you do have things like asbestos, which did turn out to actually be quite evil, but things like
and they're just like, I'm building as best as I can.
That's your one pun for today, all right?
Yes. Got it in.
But yeah, when your facts are coming from like, you know, Eiffel Man 65 on some Reddit forum, that dark web forum that you found, you know, maybe don't be bringing it up at family dinners too often.
Oh God, I just don't get that these people think that all the doctors in the world must be lying. Like, they're just, like, in this weird cult, and they're just, like, lying. I'm like, you don't think any of these doctors would come forward, but then the ones that do come forward are all these, like, weird people growing, like, strange things in their backyard and, like, have crazy eyes.
And it's very similar to the Flat Earth conspiracy, isn't it?
Yes. Oh, God, they're all blending into one.
But it's an entire web of stuff. So it's, you know, it's 5G related to COVID-19. It's all linked together. It's very far-fetched, but there's an answer for every question that you can throw at it. It's sort of like the Catholic Church. You know, that doesn't make sense. And they go, well, that's God trying to test you.
I'm like, in the mind, like, what does the government give a shit about me? Like, when I first had that kind of first debate of if I should download the COVID-19 app, I was like, oh, no, I don't want people tracking me. And then I was like, who the fuck gives a shit about me? Like, download the app. Like, it's going to help.
I think the app conversation had some other questions about it, because people are concerned about the government's ability to build an app that wouldn't be
used against us.
But yes, as far as the idea that the Australian government is organized and smart enough to do something like that, I agree. I highly doubt that. And also, I mean, I don't see what the benefit is in the government losing large amounts of money. I don't see why that would work.
But then also it's kind of a concern, and like I think it was going around on the internet, because they had all here in Victoria, for the international listeners, we had a whole lot of suburbs that just got locked down, and they were trying to contain the outbreaks in these selected suburbs.
Yes.
But now, as of today, the whole of Melbourne is in lockdown, so that didn't go so well. But there was a lot of people in those specific suburbs refusing testing, and it was actually, I think, like 10,000 refusals.
Yeah.
So a lot of people were kind of spreading the word that, like, oh, no, it's
It was the health minister that also turned around. Mm. So Jenny McArcos, she was like, 10,000 people have refused. Like, a lot of people think it's all a conspiracy theory, which is actually incorrect, because like there's no information that has come back to the Victorian government saying that people have been saying that whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So like even she, being the health minister, is spreading this information.
And then like people like Donald Trump saying fucking bleach cures it. I was like, oh, geez.
Yeah, well, that's a whole nother scary thing. But sorry, just to go back to what you were saying there, Mikey, you're right. It actually was, there was a very, very, out of those 10,000 that denied it, very small percentage of people that were saying it's a hoax.
Yes.
But of course, that's the headline that got picked up and ran. Which,
yeah, obviously. And then
there was a lot of people on social media saying, no, I refused it because the people that rocked up to do it at my house didn't have any protective gear on, or didn't seem official, or didn't have any official identification on them, and I didn't feel fair. Which is, I think, fair enough. But
Have any of you guys actually had a COVID test? yet?
No, I haven't. No.
Had one. No.
So Duncan and I went. We went through a drive-through one. So we, it was like a, like 2 weeks ago or something when we went away to the countryside for the weekend. We visited his parents and stuff.
Ooh.
I came back and I think on the Monday I felt a bit shivery and like a bit like cold like symptoms. I was like, oh fuck, like I've just gone to the country and given COVID to his whole family.
Everyone.
So I was like kind of having a little meltdown. And then he's like, okay, well, we'll go drive tomorrow. It was like before the spike in testing happened. And we went to Chadston and we went in the car like early in the morning.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they did the test. My God, they shoved that thing far up your nose, but no microchips in there.
So it's important for people to know that that doesn't need to go up the nose so far anymore.
No. Oh, really?
Yeah.
So the suffered.
Yeah. So the new, if you've been putting it off because you were scared about it going too far up your nose, don't stress. Apparently the new tests barely did push the cry button
and I, tears came down my face, but it was fine. It was so quick, like man up, it's fine. But yeah, definitely get tested. And obviously, sorry, we were both negative for COVID-19. Thank God.
My partner's had to have three because he's works as a medical doctor. At a hospital. They have to do routine testing on the hospital staff.
Yeah.
But it's starting to get a bit scary now, the hospital situation in Melbourne. We've now shut down. So parts of a lot of large hospitals have now been shut down. Yes. The Northern, the Alfred, the...
Yeah, as of this morning, they had someone at the Alfred test positive, one of the doctors there. So now they're like scrambling.
I think there's been a few at the Alfred, yeah.
Yeah.
And then that goes back to this whole conspiracy thing. If the doctors were all in on it, why would they be in on it if all the doctors around the world are catching it and dying, you know?
Yeah, do you think, because so many people in lockdown, do you think that's like breeding like people being more susceptible to like believing all this stuff because there's nothing else to do? So they're bored. So they're like, you know what? Aliens came down and gave us coronavirus by 5G towers, zooming away off the edge of the earth.
I think a lot of people are letting their sort of anxieties getting the better of them, especially because there's so much uncertainty and there is so much misinformation. I think that is unfortunately what's happening a lot of the time.
I think you're actually really, really on the money there, Mikey. I think people are scared of the unknown because we don't really know. We don't. There's so much we don't know about this virus. It's I think probably easier for your mind and to feel comfortable with this crazy conspiracy theory because you've got someone to blame and you've got a reason. Whereas if you don't know, then it's actually a little bit scarier. So that might be why people are so open to the extreme ideas.
Yeah, and like also like obviously a lot of people out there are very anti-government. So like I guess anything that they are saying, people are just like, no, they're incorrect. Like this is a lie. This is the hoax. They're just making it up, which is really sad because especially in something that's so intense and very real, they're actually not lying about it whatsoever. Mm.
Yeah, if you want some actual good conspiracies, watch Unsolved Mysteries on Netflix.
Oh my gosh, I've just started watching it.
I really want to start watching it because I was like, I saw some clip about aliens. I was like, this I can get into.
Love
I
will it. Make my team
yeah, yeah. It's ridiculous and far-fetched, but it's fun to watch.
Yeah, you see, that's a fun kind of conspiracy, guys. Take note.
And the problem is often like, I'm not saying all people, I don't want to be condescending or anything like that, but often some of the people that are reading this are not the smartest people. They might not have had the same education that we've had and that sort of thing. And so where we sort of, bring in those things we were taught about fact checking and sort of looking for supportive evidence and that sort of thing when we're trying to make up a decision about something, they may not have those guards in place for themselves. And so you can sort of then see why if it's theories about medication, that sort of stuff, that they are believing it. And then when you've got someone like Donald Trump who's going on television and saying, you know, coming up with these seemingly completely made up theories about different medications that can work and that sort of stuff, that gets very much woven into the fabric of these lies, and he becomes the saving grace that's, you know, trying to tell us the truth about what Bill Gates is doing and that sort of thing. I don't know if you saw that nursing home in the States, that it's just been discovered that the staff at this nursing home were giving the anti-malaria pills to their elderly patients, doses of anti-malaria pills to their patients, because that's something that Donald Trump had said, and they believe so that's where it sort of starts becoming scary and dangerous when you've got people of power sort of.
I think I actually read a study about like older people versus younger people, and like older people taking things as face value, whereas young people are more likely to do research and fact check things. Like older people, like that's why like on Facebook and stuff, they'll just see a video, like a lot of older people and generation stuff, they'll just see a video and just take it at face value and believe it, whereas other people will go research and like dive more into it and stuff. Like, I guess that's why you get older people with all those internet clickable ads that are like downloading viruses onto their computers. But
Miss Gia Gunn, I think it was last week or the week before, she was out and about like doing her thing, went out to a restaurant and they were temperature checking and she was 1 degree above what was deemed okay to come in, and so she started filming it being like, this is a hoax, this is ridiculous, I can't go into this restaurant, and then went home and like went on live and was just like, this is a hoax, why would anyone want to wear a mask, this is ridiculous, it's the government trying to control everybody and like force us back into our houses.
Yeah.
And everyone in the drag community like came at her and just like,
I wish she said I want to eat here, and then the waitstaff said, well, what you're gonna want to do isn't what you're gonna do.
It would have been hilarious.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Now, tonight we're joined by clinical psychologist Dr. Marcus Squirrel, who specializes in treatment for gay men who engage in compulsive sexual behaviors. Marcus, thanks so much for dropping in.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show.
Hi, Marcus. Now, it's probably best to start with some definitions for our listeners. What is sexually compulsive behavior and how is it different from sex addiction?
So look, there's lots of debate in the area in terms of, I suppose, in terms of sort of diagnostic labels. And the one that I suppose is most commonly used by clinicians and doctors is the term sexual addiction or sex addiction. But there's a whole lot of other terms that also get used, such as hypersexual disorder, impulse control disorder, and more recently, out of control sexual behavior. So it's important to remember that there is no formally recognized diagnosis of sexual addiction in our psychiatric manual. And that's because there's currently sort of insufficient research and agreement amongst mental health professionals to be able to actually apply any sort of formal diagnosis to describe someone's behaviour. Mm-hmm. But so just in terms of, I suppose, what sexually compulsive behaviour is, it's characterised by repetitive and intense preoccupation with sexual fantasies, urges and behaviours that are distressing to the individual. And it also has to cause, I suppose, some sort of psychosocial impairment.
Mm-hmm.
By that I mean, like, it's got to actually, like, impact on your relationships with other people.
Because you often hear sort of, like, anecdotally on the scene, people will sort of use, you know, sex addict or, you know, someone has, like, a compulsive sexual behaviour or something as almost like a throwaway line about someone in their group that might be quite sexually adventurous. But it's good to hear the definition is. It's not just someone that enjoys having a lot of sex. It's when that person lets it sort of stops them from living their day-to-day life, I guess.
Yeah, it's got to have some sort of functional impairment on their life, whether it's sort of impacting on their work or their ability to study. I've worked with guys who've been, I suppose, caught at work looking at internet porn, and that's ended up sort of resulting in sort of disciplinary action. So it's where, I suppose, you can't readily regulate what it is that you're doing and the negative fallout from it.
And do you sort of look at just the physical side of sex, or is it also people using apps and things like that? Like, would the time they're spending on Grindr and those sorts of things be part of the behavior that you're looking at?
Yeah, so I suppose in terms of understanding people's behavior, it's not necessarily face-to-face contact with people. People, I suppose, explore their sexuality in a whole range of different ways, and sometimes it's by themselves in their bedroom, indulging in sometimes many, many hours of porn. Other times it's face-to-face encounters with people. Sometimes it's also, I suppose, something in between, even where they might be using like a web-based type cam models, for example. And I've worked with people who have literally spent hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars over a weekend on those models. So,
wow.
Yeah, huge amounts of money. And So it doesn't really denote any particular type of sexual behaviour. I suppose it's any way that you can, I suppose, express your sexuality, which can become problematic potentially.
Mm-hmm. So is there any research to suggest that overconsumption of pornography can lead to sort of problems in this area, do you think?
I suppose it's, well, some people by definition would call the actual use of pornography potentially something that could lead to overconsumption. So the excessive internet pornography use also can become problematic if it's contributing to being up half of the night and being then sort of dead dog tired throughout the day. Does it lead people to being more, I suppose, more sexually adventurous or having more sexual partners? I think probably the jury's out on that one because people explore their sexuality in different sorts of ways. I don't think necessarily just because somebody watches a lot of pornography that they are then likely to sort of have lots more sexual partners. For some people, it can actually become a substitute for real life interactions.
Mm. You actually also have a research interest in online sexual activity. What other ways are people compulsively engaging on the internet?
Well, as I said before, one of the ways that they might engage might be to use the cam sites. That's also something that can meet up lots of time and certainly be extremely expensive. As you know, like most of the porn people are watching it, people aren't typically paying for it.
I guess there's also like OnlyFans, which is so big now, and all the gays pumping that out.
yep. People are obviously moving away more from sort of web-based chat type sites that you might have used back in my day, and some of the younger viewers probably wouldn't even know about things like gay.com and some of those other ones where you were actually
Manhunt. Teen Chat. I was always on Teen Chat when I was in high school.
Lots of people are also presenting for, I suppose, for their compulsive use of cyber sex chat. Now, it doesn't always mean that people are necessarily hooking up with people either. Mm. For some people, it can be just the thrill of the chase and it's kept exclusively to just chatting. That tends to be sort of more problematic in straight relationships. I find where often female partners are upset about that discovery, but it also can be upsetting for anyone. But yeah, the other way obviously is using the apps just, I suppose, for the purpose of lots and lots and lots of hookups. And it might be something that they're engaging in sort of most nights of the week for several hours a day.
Wow. Speaking of like different parts of, I guess, someone's life that it can affect, what sort of effect does these sort of compulsive behaviours have on a men's mental health sort of in the short run and in the long term, do you think?
Look, I suppose the mental health implications can be increased isolation. If you're spending lots of time, I suppose, away from friends or away from partners, people can become quite isolated and not sort of build perhaps real life relationships, which can have a sort of a lot of value or a lot of meaning. Look, there's evidence that lots of sexual acting out behaviour sort of increases levels of anxiety, depression and stress, but also it's just as likely that those same people may also be perhaps more depressed, anxious and stressed in the first place, and that's possibly why they sort of gravitate to higher levels of sexual behaviour. Okay. But I think we also need to be really careful not to pathologise the behaviour, because that often happens amongst mental health professionals. There's a bit of a joke sort of in my industry that anyone who's having more sex than the psychologist is a sex addict. So what is the right amount of sex to be having?
Yeah, how do you judge?
And obviously the gay community has far, far more sexual partners than the heterosexual community for a whole plethora of different reasons. So perhaps the standards that we might be being judged by may not exactly be entirely appropriate.
But I'm sure many gay men want to know, where is the actual line drawn between sexually compulsive behaviour and someone that might actually just be highly sexually active?
Look, I think it's incredibly grey because there is no, I suppose, official test. It's very subjective. And I think it's more helpful, I suppose, if the actual individual who's seeking help or thinking about seeking help is able to, I suppose, make their own decisions around whether or not their behaviour is problematic. So if it's causing that person distress and it's resulting in them perhaps not being able to maintain long-term relationships, if that is what they're wanting, perhaps also when it's linked to substance use and the person doesn't feel particularly confident having sex with people outside of the substance use. So we often see that with chem sex, Mm-hmm. Look, when I think the sexual behaviour leaves the person feeling a lot worse about themselves, and there's
than they were beforehand.
Yeah, and there's a real dip in their mood afterwards, or it's sort of increasing feelings of shame or isolation. Perhaps that's also a bit of an indicator, as opposed to just having a high sex life and being quite sexually active. But what will upset one person, another person will just shrug their shoulders and just say, "Well, I've got a high libido. I like to get a lot of action." So it's pretty grey.
Just speaking of shame, there, do you think there are links between how gay men experience potential shame about their sexual impulses while they're children and as they're developing? Do you think that has a connection to being more prone to compulsive sexual behaviour as an adult?
Yeah, there's certainly some evidence to suggest that. I think that shame often sort of manifests in internalised homophobia. Mm. There's plenty of research to suggest that people who sort of experience more internalized homophobia, sort of more negative attitudes towards themselves and their own sexuality, and I suppose gay people in general tend to engage in high levels of substance abuse, high levels of risky sexual activity to act out, more condomless sex.
So I'm keen to know, with people that are finding themselves, acting on these impulses so obsessively, and you sort of mentioned earlier, you know, sometimes people are doing it at work and that sort of thing. When they are able to abstain from sort of sexual engagement at work, but then will find themselves breaking after work and going for a hookup, is that something that they've usually planned ahead? Like, are they lining up these hookups on Grindr or the apps so that they're ready as soon as they finish work? Or is it more of a, like, jump on straight after work and find someone straight away, or go to the beat and find someone straight away?
I think it's both, to be honest. I work with some people who are lining up what they're going to do on the way home. Mm-hmm. Perhaps they might be telling their partner that they're going off to the gym, for example, but instead they'll hook up with somebody on the way home, and they might have been chatting to that person perhaps at lunchtime. Mm-hmm. For other people, they might opportunistically sort of call past a beat on the way home. And for some people, it becomes their major sort of focus when they get home, and sort of the evening is dedicated to the apps and finding somebody to talk up with. So
what sort of strategies do you work through for men in those situations, like possibly lying to their partners, like on the way home or going to the gym and going for hookups?
Well, I think it's really important to, I suppose, be taking a fairly non-judgmental approach to working with the issues. So I suppose the approach I'm taking is I'm trying to typically understand, I suppose, what the actual function of the behaviour is. What is it that they're actually looking for from these encounters? It's sometimes the infidelity, if they are in a monogamous relationship, is happening because they're just not particularly happy in their relationship, or they're not very attracted to their partners, and they're wanting to seek out sex elsewhere. For other people, it can be just more of an impulsive pattern that they've carried over into this new relationship, which just happens to be monogamous. Sometimes they might start out in a monogamous relationship, but it becomes too difficult to talk about with their partner, or they feel a lot of embarrassment or shame about wanting to open up the partner. So instead they seek out sexual contact with other people outside of the relationship agreement.
Yeah.
Do you ever find there's an element of, I mean, I know some people that have behaviour that this sounds very reminiscent of. Do you ever find that there's a self-destructive sort of self-loathing, I guess, where it's actually not about them wanting to cheat on the partner, but more about that they're not good enough for a relationship, so they need to fuck it up?
Yeah, for sure. I suppose if you've had a whole succession of unsuccessful relationships in the past, you mightn't feel that you're actually worthy of your partner. So you engage in behaviours that are quite ultimately sort of self-destructive to the relationship. So low self-esteem can also, I suppose, fit into this, and that need to get validation from other people.
Sure.
I think lots of people enter relationships perhaps with the very best of intentions, and when the relationship is really exciting at the start and the sex is really hot, it's really easy to say to a partner, there's no one else I want to be with. I feel really committed to you. And when they say that at one point in time, they really genuinely mean it. But perhaps a year, 2 years into the relationship, the excitement from the relationship has died down, and they start to, I suppose, go back to some of their former patterns of behavior.
I guess there's also an element of, like, for a lot of younger gay men especially, quite often I feel like our heterosexual counterparts at school learn how to warm up to a relationship, and they start, you know, by having boyfriends and girlfriends in the start of high school and that sort of thing, and dating and developing whilst their peers develop at the same time. Whereas for a lot of gay men, they turn 18, go to a gay bar, and all of a sudden they can hook up and go on dates and fuck people. And then I guess it's sort of then looking at, are they getting a whole lot of validation from this sex because they didn't have this slow gradual warm up, that it sort of, that sort of becomes the addiction of needing to continually hook up. So when they do go into their first, or, you know, one of their early relationships, I'm speaking, I guess, from experience here, that it's really hard to adjust to a relationship.
Yeah, I think there is a lot in what you just said. Just, I suppose, just a lack of opportunity of role models, but also the sort of like the psychosexual experiences and the opportunity to form relationships, because often that's really stunted because they haven't been out whilst they're at school and their straight peers around them are having relationships, and perhaps they're further on down that path than what they are. So instead, the focus just becomes perhaps to seek out validation and to explore this really exciting world that's out there, and often it's explored through sex. And lots of it.
Yeah.
And in case we all have forgotten, we are actually going through a pandemic right now. For people with sexual compulsions, how might lockdowns for COVID-19 be impacting their lives?
Yeah, look, pretty significantly. I think on the whole, people are trying to do the right thing. And I suppose I don't want to overgeneralize and I suppose paint a bad picture, because that's not necessarily particularly fair. I'm seeing people who are often struggling. But look, it's an issue I'm speaking about every day. For some people, they're still continuing, unfortunately, with their chem sex, and they're going to struggle enormously to really regulate what they're doing, despite the best of intentions in my office and sort of making agreements that they won't do that over this period of time. I think the shame is enormous during this period of time. So therefore, people will perhaps, if they are going to do it, they'll seek it out perhaps in more covert ways, such as going to beats, as opposed to perhaps necessarily just hooking up online. Because if you're hooking up with people online, you're also, I suppose, running the risk of somebody shaming you or saying something sarcastic about your behaviour.
Yeah.
I've spoken to people also who have used massage services over this period of time and experience enormous shame afterwards as well, and that sort of sent them into a real shame spiral. Look, it's quite possible also there's an increased use of internet porn as well, because that becomes the substitute. It's a safer way of, I suppose, of managing their libidos of this period of time. So perhaps people might gravitate back towards that if once they were acting out or hooking up with people as well.
I guess failing all else, you can do what I think it was the Dutch government told everyone to find a fuck buddy for lockdown.
Oh my God.
I don't think they use the phrase fuck buddy, but which is probably Dutch as well. They said, you know, if you're single and you're used to hooking up, pick someone and you can hook up with them for the next 4 weeks, and that's your little bubble of
Oh my God. Imagine having a designated hooker.
I know. Well, Marcus, thanks so much for coming and for helping our listeners understand a little bit more about this topic. It is something that we often joke about, I guess, but it's good to actually hear how it really genuinely affects people's lives, and especially to think about what they might be going through during this COVID-19 time. Now, before we finish, though, if people have recognized some of the behaviors mentioned in this episode in themselves or people they love, and they're considering getting help, what's the first step?
The first step, I suppose, would be to find a potential clinician that can work with these sorts of issues. Somebody who's obviously LGBT friendly is going to be really enormously important. I would strongly encourage people to move away from therapists that sort of practice based on a sex addiction model, because I think that's inherently pathologizing. Somebody who is more willing and more open-minded and are going to look perhaps at the values that people have, and to be able to understand the function of the behavior without sort of sticking a label on you and telling you that you're bad, because that's just going to drive further shame in. But yeah, I suppose just finding a person who is a good match for you, and probably actually interviewing the psychologist over the phone before you actually make an appointment to get a bit of a sense of how they work, what their values are, because the risk of seeing somebody is you can make somebody, I suppose, feel a lot more ashamed and not actually get a better outcome.
And then not reach out.
And not reach out. So you're moving away from sort of any Christian type services, I would recommend.
Well, thank you again for chatting with us, Marcus. How can people get in touch with you?
Look, we've got a website, Richmond Central Psychology. We're based in Thomas Street in Richmond. Mm-hmm. There's 8 of us at the practice, most of us gay psychologists.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for joining us, Marcus. We'll talk to you soon.
Pleasure.
Well, it's good to be back. It's also nice. Yeah. I have to say, I love my country towns, and I'm not having a go. It's nice to be able, back in Melbourne and be able to wear my own clothes. When we were in Daylesford, because we're staying like 10 minutes out,
yeah,
there's obviously been a bit of tension between rural Victoria and inner city Melbourne lately.
Okay,
and so there was definitely a bit of a vibe on the street that locals weren't too happy about having. Well, some of the locals, some of them were incredibly welcoming, as Daylesford generally is. But we saw some people yelling at tourists on the street and in the supermarket. Market and stuff like that. So my boyfriend Steph and I got really nervous about going back into town.
I know.
Obviously, it turns out it was justified on behalf of the locals because they have now had to shut down the city Melbourne.
Look,
and just to be very clear, we didn't break any rules.
I just want to be clear that Thomas Jasper's was patient zero.
But so we decided when we were going into town that we would try and look like locals. And I don't want to sound judgmental. So I was like, get your tracky dacks on, like put a beanie on, like, you know, don't do your hair, that sort of thing. And then we were driving into town, and he was, because he's British, like very British, mm-hmm. he's like London British, so he was like, I'm gonna try my Australian country act. And I was like, okay, sweetie, I'll do the talking and you stand behind me.
I love it. Oh, cute.
Bless. But no, I'm thrilled to be back, but fuck, I can't wait to go back.
We're
to
happy to have you back in our ears.
Yes.
But
yeah.
Do you know what we need to do? We need to organize, because hopefully by the time Chill Out Festival rolls around, which is the big gay for anyone.
When's that?
The big gay festival in Daylesford. It's always the weekend just before Mardi Gras, I think.
Yeah.
Or the weekend just after Mardi Gras. It's around Mardi Gras. We need to organize going there because it is.
Oh, yes. Most remember this year you were trying to get me to go. Didn't it like rain the whole time this year?
I think you're thinking of Gay Times and 2 years ago. But anyway,
I'm getting
Chill Out's very fun. We'll go to Chill Out as
well. Well, we had a really lovely interview with Marcus earlier. That was great. Thank you for coming in and chatting.
Fascinating.
Stay tuned, though, for our Patreon listeners. We still have a little topic coming up. So we're talking about the Stop Hate for Profit campaign and the corporate backlash against Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg.
Zuckerberg.
I'm sorry. Stay tuned for that part. But until then, bye.
Bye. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.